Have a seat. But I'm running this meeting.
Oh, absolutely.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 26, Melrose Impossible. Yuck. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Dave does not approve of the movie pun title.
I mean, it's no I Am Curious Melrose, thank God, but it's down there. I agree.
Guess this wasn't a movie yet at the time this came out. It was still just a TV show. The movies hadn't started.
Oh, God, yeah.
The next year. Anyway, hello, everybody. Before we get into this episode, wanted to tell you, again with this, episode 48 is dropping May 21st, and it is Let's Watch Doug Savant in Masquerade. Listen.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
You want to see Doug Savant and Rob Lowe, the actual star of the movie, at their 1988 levels of hotness, each shirtless at least once, much more than once for Lowe, plus...
And much more than shirtless.
Thank you. Also, his nude butt, which appears less than 6 minutes in. Spoiler.
Art.
Anyway, yeah, fucking duh, you want to see that. It's on HBO Max. We'll link it in the show notes. Get ready to get into it. But for now...
Oh, man.
We're talking about Melrose Impossible, starting with our D plot. Joe tries and fails to resist Jess's charms. And, like, I got to start this out, remain in the horny zone where I started, but I know I've already shared too much with regard to my hot pants for Michael, but groggy, rumpled morning time Jake in this scene is also really doing it for me, and you can see that in the visual aids. Like,
I mean, I get it, but there's like something about the giant jeans that's like, I hear you,
but let me also note they're slightly falling down and you can see the top of his boxer shorts. So,
yeah, I'd feel better about it if you couldn't see any boxer shorts at all, but
okay. True. Good point.
Your arguments are noted for the record.
Yeah, hit up the visual aids and decide for yourselves. He comes out to see Jess, who is holding a box, which, like, when did Jess accumulate enough stuff to put in a box? Like, he just showed up here from Oregon. Anyway, Jess is packing to leave. It is obvious Jake does not want him around, and Jess doesn't blame him. He wouldn't want someone he didn't trust hanging around either. And Jake yelps at him not to go. But what Jess apparently actually was up all night doing was perfecting his performance of self-pity, as we hear in clip two.
I'm going back to Ellensburg. I'm a dead-end guy, Jake. I belong in a dead-end town.
I don't know why I didn't trust you last night. I'm sorry, man, you know. We just got off on the wrong foot. Come on.
Maybe. Or maybe it's just me. Jake, I got so many regrets, man. I always wanted to protect you, you know, be a big brother to you. But
drink.
Somehow the roles got reversed. And now, all I want in the whole world is for you to trust me.
Hey, I got a late meeting tonight with my tax guy. I need someone I can trust to cover the bar. Can you do that for me?
Sure.
Good, so you're staying.
Thanks.
Okay, forget about it.
I have to say, this performance by Grant Cho is really pretty, like, subtle and good in terms of, like, this flappy, overly hale, please don't call my bluff and actually stay.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's good.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable, but it's good.
Yeah. But there's also, like, there's a thread in it that, like, he wants to have that relationship that, like, Jess is fraudulently describing. Jake wants that for real.
Like, yeah.
Which is sad.
given it is. Like, have you looked at the man's chin? This is not... This is not the way to go.
I didn't mean that, but I mean true. I just mean given where it's going. I mean, spoiler.
Yeah.
So later, Joe finds Jess behind the bar at Shooters and orders a beer. He says he and Jake made peace after their spat at dinner over their credit card the night before, and then starts buttering her up, thanking her for helping him with Jake. Maybe they should try dinner again, just the two of them, and implies that he already ran this invitation by Jake and Jake approved it. And after he pets her arm a little bit, saying he's just a regular guy who thinks she's incredible, she agrees to consider it. And so Jess and his flannel tied around his waist, because it's the 90s, take Joe mini golfing. And while she's lining up her putt, he pontificates that he's a simple guy who doesn't need much. For him, having it all means being committed to one person and having something that lasts. The main reason he and Jake never got along is that Jake was always putting a wall up around his emotions, and Joe finally tells him to shut up and let her putt in so many words. She misses, and he says they won't count that since there was clown distraction, the clown being Jess, because he was talking too much, and they have this exchange in clip three.
I like the way you talk. God, you're so different from Jake. It's hard to believe you guys are brothers.
Yeah, I know. I guess I just feel too much. It's just that emotion is a wave between people. It's passion. And when it rises up, you gotta catch it. And you gotta feel it.
Jess, I don't think that I would.
You know what? I think I should show you how to handle your club.
Whose club?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big swing, so.
It is. But I have to say, in this scene, he does a bit where he, like, kneels down to get her ball or something and, like, slowly stands back up. And you can, I'd made a GIF of this. It's in the visual aids where you can see, like, she is very convincing with the lust-drunk face at, like, this move. It's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And the move is not bad either.
It's a good move.
Well blocked, everybody.
Yep.
Good job.
So, some number of nights later, Joe comes to Shooters. She checks that Jake isn't there before saying she came to talk to Jess alone. And so they go to the alley out back where she nervously says she knows there's an electricity between them, but she can't do anything that will hurt Jake. And when she starts to say there are lots of other women Jess could date, he smiles that he gets it. She doesn't need to drag it out, but adds that losing what they have is tragic because his feelings for her are stronger than just electricity. And she visibly melts, again, well done by Daphne Zuniga.
Yeah.
And looking and sounding like she's about to pass out from all the liquid in her body rushing to her pants, she admits that she feels the same pull, but that's not the point. They really can't do this. And so he just wants to know, can he kiss her just once so he has something to remember? And she agrees. God. And of course, after that one kiss, she goes back for more and they end up fucking against the wall. And now they both have Hep C. Good job, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where we leave them for this week. On to the C plot. Jane finally loses her business for real in the studio. Stupid Jane is on the phone telling her supplier she can't send back the fabric to them because it's already cut and sewn, so they definitely don't want it now. Smirk. As Sydney wanders in, Jane babbles promises to have a checkout by the end of the day, and after she hangs up, she tries to get rid of Sydney, who immediately starts in needling her. Sydney's been thinking about a new car, maybe one of those cute Jaguar convertibles. Jane dismisses her, so Sydney basically has to yell to get her attention. Clip four.
Too bad you don't have the money to get the work to the stores. I, however, got $100,000 from Michael and Kimberly.
Okay. As we discussed in the last episode, it was not remotely clear to either of us then that Sydney actually did pull that off. Like, we talked about it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And also, like, who paid? Did yeah. they both pay? I mean, blackmail.
Right.
Like, sure.
I think they both separately paid is what we're supposed to
right.
think. Because she pitched them each separately. Whatever.
To
she got
her
it
half,
all.
To give yeah. her half of their half. So, okay, whatever.
But it wouldn't be half of their half because each of them was planning to steal it from the other, I assume.
Right.
Anyway, I'm glad she did, but they could have made it more evident, like, in Michael and Kimberly's reactions when they compared notes, like, this bitch, you know, like, something. But anyway, Jane and Sydney go on. Clip five.
You're making this up.
Blackmail is a growth industry, Jane, especially when you're dealing with snakes. Now, I would waste this considerable sum on senseless luxury items unless there was some struggling young company somewhere I could invest in.
Are you sure you have this money free and clear?
You bet you're ready to wear, I do. It's my lawyer's office. If you want my help, meet me there in the morning. We'll drop some papers.
I'm not sure this lawyer is going to help her launder that money because you have to explain where it came from, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, having, you know, read ahead for the next ons, I think there is maybe a like quadruple cross about to happen somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Surely the lawyer is Chris. Just kidding. This is just so, like, it's hard to even sort of enjoy Jane, like, getting Janed by her own Janeard because,
yes,
like, it's mm-hmm. so Jane. It's not satisfying. It's just boring and sad.
Yeah.
She's always wearing a claw clip. Like, why are you like this?
And yet, I'm happy it happened because she is a sucky character, which is, you can tell the writers think so too, because she's barely been in this season. Like, she's not had anything to do since Chris. Anyway, moving on.
Well, yeah.
We rejoin the sisters at the lawyer's office. It seems Sydney has learned something from her previous failed schemes, because here's what happens there. Clip six.
I don't understand. This says Sydney becomes president of Mancini Designs?
We feel that's the best way for her to protect her sizable investment in the company.
Sydney, you don't know anything about designing.
Jane, I know a good deal about design. But out of courtesy to you, I'll let you keep your sphere of influence. I'll just run the business end.
You know even less about that. Oh, unless you count running a call girl ring.
Don't tick me off, Jane. I'm trying to save your pathetic little butt.
There's no need for us to lose our tempers. The proposal's quite simple, really. If you want Miss Andrews to invest her money in your company, you agree to her terms. If not,
you'll go bankrupt. I'm only trying to help, Jane.
Just don't.
This is what comes of being shitty at business.
You get
railroaded into this move, and Jane has no choice but to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime later, Amanda's getting her mail when Sydney rolls up behind her in a cuter version of Allison's red suit, which we'll get to in the A-plot. Amanda cracks that Sydney's playing dress-up, but Sydney snaps that she's not and tells her all about her new position. And P.S., D&D is on probation. She's not happy with the way they've been handling her accounts. And Amanda takes evident pleasure in telling her that's Allison's problem now. She's got to get something out of this. And that's where we leave these idiots for now. On to the B plot. Kimberly thinks she needs a camp called No More Victims. Nat finds Michael at the hospital trying to find Kimberly. He has some forms regarding her papers. He needs to healthcare. But Michael,
what he needs is haircut.
He does.
It's not as bad as it's going to be, but it's like we're entering James Vanderbeek sea anemone clamped to head levels of bad.
Yeah.
This is a good looking person.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that he never gets a plot he can actually be happy in for more than 10 minutes. Please get the man a haircut.
Yeah.
I'm not a crackpot.
It's real feathery, like cockatoo feathery. Like it's getting taller and foofier. Yeah.
Yes. It's not okay.
Anyway, Michael, frustrated for reasons we'll get to in the A-plot, barks that he doesn't know where Kimberly is and doesn't care. He's just glad she's gone. Smash cut to where Kimberly is, belly crawling through muck in a boot camp situation while a mean man yells at her. And when she makes it out of the obstacle, we see she's in a sweatshirt that reads, "No more victims," and on brand. The drill sergeant asks, rhetorically, I believe, if she and her fellow campers want to be victims all their lives. And Kimberly's just running her own course when some broad behind her, we will learn her name is Dodd, pushes her down. Sarge sees and admonishes Kimberly, who puts on a burst of speed and catches up to Dodd on the rope wall climby thing. You know what I'm talking about. But then Sarge warns Dodd, who kicks Kimberly in the head and knocks her to the ground. Like, come on, man. Be a buddy, Sarge. A little much.
Jesus.
And while Kimberly's lying there panting, Sarge comes to pull her up and says this. Clip 7.
Now you listen to me, Shaw. You're in no more victims camp now. You will not stop. You will not give up. You will succeed. And you will be stronger than you ever were when you walk out of here. No more victims means control. It means strength. And it means never, ever letting another human being get you down again. You got that? You got that?
I got that. I got that.
Good.
Okay. You will regret that, Sergeant.
It doesn't seem to you like maybe a camp like this would require any medical history?
Mm-hmm.
Like letting them know there's literally a plate in her head and maybe she shouldn't be kicked in it.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. They're fucking around and they're going to find out.
They are. And they will. This is also when I noticed the script on Sarge's NMV for No More Victims hat is like a thick version of the NWA hat. And I don't love that if it was intentional, but you can see it side by side and judge for yourself in the visual.
Yeah. And if it wasn't, how wasn't it?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I did not clock that, but once I saw it in the visual aids, I was like, oh,
yeah,
that's no.
Anyway. Kimberly has maybe got Sarge's message too much because she keeps her eyes fixed on Dodd behind Sarge, which is when A, we see Dodd is Mackenzie Phillips, and B, starts suspecting Dodd is going to be a victim herself before very long.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, the boot campers jog out to wherever. Sarge says they've given him 2 weeks to remake their lives. The point of the camp is to send them back to their new lives with Clip 8.
With courage and without fear. With confidence and without doubt, and with the physical strength and stature to stand up to anyone who means you harm and scream, I'm not a victim anymore. Let's hear it. Scream it.
I'm not a victim anymore. I'm not a victim anymore. I'm not a victim anymore.
I'm not a victim anymore. I'm not a victim anymore. I'm not a...
All right, Shaw. All right, Shaw. That's good. Thanks, Shaw. It's enough.
Why are you laughing? That was creepy. Come on, dude. Anyway, then they're supposed to pair up for takedown exercises, and the last two broads standing are Kimberly and Dodd, who grapple. Kimberly pins Dodd first and punches her in the ribs a couple of times, but then Dodd flips her, and they're staring at each other with such passionate hatred that, A, this is probably another formative sexual moment for some viewers, and B, Sarge has to come over and pull them apart, telling them to watch their intensity. And then it's time for the campers to have a fun campfire and for Sarge to put Kimberly on blast for the difficulties she's had fitting in. And Dodd wants to apologize for lashing out at her. Clip 9.
I come from a disadvantaged and abusive relationship. Anyway, I want to apologize for taking it out on you. And I'd like to welcome you to our group as a sister.
Thank you, Maureen. And let me tell you first, from the bottom of my heart, that I couldn't care less about your feelings. I hate feelings. And you can lash out at me all you want because it just makes me stronger. You see, I'm not here for sisters. I'm here for power. I thirst for strength, battle skills, and determination. And when I am filled with those qualities, I will flat out destroy those who have hurt me and take back what is mine. I will find selfness when I am standing on the corpses of my enemies.
What is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women. That is good. That is good.
So good.
I mean, that seems like perfectly reasonable goal setting.
Yeah.
Especially for a soap opera character.
Just so you know,
the end of that clip you just heard, where I just added the whole Conan the Barbarian similar quote in post. So you know what it is.
Okay. Excellent.
Love it.
So then Kimberly gets up and douses the fire with her drink. So I guess that's a wrap on the campfire for everybody.
Yeah, really. Like, people are sitting there with marshmallows like, dick.
Yeah. The next night, it's time for the campers to be transformed in the sweat lodge. Yikes. Cultural appropriation, I guess.
At least they didn't pee on a burial ground like some people.
I thought that too. Kimberly starts repeating, "Inside myself is the warrior." Everyone else joins in. But hours later, the logs in the fire are down to ash and only Kimberly is still chanting. She locks eyes with Dodd, who's nodding off on the other side of the fire. But when she closes her eyes, Kimberly starts hearing voices from her past. And the women across from her transform into her antagonists back home. And we get this, clip 10.
You're a fraud, Kimberly. You know
inside
that?
Inside my...
Michael only saw you as a pale imitation of me.
Look at you. You're a mess. Sweaty, smelly. You really are a lunatic, aren't you?
What she is a witch. Aren't you,
inside
Kim?
Inside myself.
A lying, betraying, baby-stealing witch.
That's inside good. Witch is good. Is and a murderer. Inside myself. How many people have you tried to kill, Kimberly? Michael, Matt, me. I may be nuts, but Kimberly here is a pure, drooling, evil troll. Wouldn't you say so, Kimmy? You can chant all you want, but it won't work. You know why? I'll tell you. Because you're a pathetic, scrawny, stupid little girl from Ohio. You're weak and you're scared and you're unbalanced. You're not even very sexy. I stole your husband right from under your nose, and I didn't even want him.
He's mine. He's mine.
He doesn't want you. Nobody wants you. Nobody even likes you. Your life is over, Kimberly. Why don't you just die? You tried once. Do it again. Die, Kim. Die, Kim.
Inside myself is the warrior.
Die, Kim.
Inside myself is the warrior. Inside myself is the warrior.
Die, Kim.
Eep. That's a lot.
I mean, it's, yeah, sort of dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At first I was like, why is Joe even there? I was like, oh yeah, the baby stealing. That was this season.
Yeah. Not at the beginning either. Like, what episode is this? 48? I mean, yeah. They run through a lot of plot road on this show.
They really
do.
Yeah. Whew. So Kimberly dives across the tent and tackles Dodd outside. Dodd's like, what the fuck? So they wrestle briefly, and when they both get back on their feet, Dodd punches Kimberly in the face, which is when Sarge appears to intervene. Dodd says Kimberly's completely lost control, but Kimberly says actually she's found her mission. Oh, fuck. This is very bad for everybody.
Yeah.
Finally, our A-plot. Amanda tries to ditch Michael. Everyone tries to ditch Allison. Amanda's getting ready to leave for work when Michael calls and burbles about how sincere he is in his love for her and that he can't accept losing her. And she's basically like, tough shit, and hangs up. And when he calls back immediately, Matt entering behind him at the hospital, which Michael ignores, Amanda's line is busy / she took the phone off the hook. The past.
Yeah.
At the office, Brooke delivers Amanda her messages, 12 from a Michael Mancini, and Amanda does this, clip 11. Oh.
I mean, really.
So good. She tells Brooke to transfer him to security if he calls again, and then remembers they have a scheme cooking and pulls Brooke aside to say they need to turn the heat up on Allison to get it to the next phase, clip 12.
And anyone as incompetent as she has had to have made some mistakes. I want you to check her schedule, her files, everything. Find me something I can blow her away with.
Okay, but I've got to tell you, I don't feel great about this. Allison has been good to me.
Brooke, she's using you. Stick with me and you might have a future. With my experience and your family connections, we could build something big together. Or you could spend your life trotting after Allison with your steno pad.
You're right.
Good. Then get to it.
I mean, well, first of all, I'm enjoying all of this, but like, it's time to get on with it.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Like, let's get to the Eeyore Works factory, I guess. But it's also like, it's a little unclear to me. Like, I don't know what Charlotte knows,
no.
Kristen Davis, sorry, knows about what Brooke knows, if that makes any sense.
Yes,
like, I
yeah.
think she's playing it really well, but I also don't remember, like, I was watching it at this time, the show, but I don't remember, like, how far back she's, like, sort of really scheming, and how much of it is just, like, her having some kind of VC Andrews situation with Perry King, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering that correctly. Like, it's just sometimes a little disconcerting to not know which side she's really on in this plot, because, like, butter wouldn't melt no matter who she's talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of regretful mugging, but then mm-hmm. the way she is in the part of this plot that involves Billy is, like, so focused and directed that even though it's Billy, it's like, but what are you exactly?
Yeah.
So I don't know if the writers know. Is that an impression you're getting, or am I just, like, picking at nothing?
I think, I mean, she's still new enough there that she doesn't necessarily know the lay of the land. Like, it's, you know, we always say this, like, it's not like she's been watching the show. She doesn't know Amanda's right. whole deal necessarily, like, other than from the outside as someone who was also in the industry.
Right.
But I also think that she suffers in these early scenes of having to, like, reset the story for new viewers,
yeah.
which that is what that was, I think, mostly. But it makes yeah. it seem like she doesn't know what side she's on or hasn't decided.
Right. Or the writers haven't decided, because it's like they have successfully, I think, left themselves open to two interpretations. One is that she created a blundertunity for Allison, and Allison never misses one of those. And then mm-hmm. the other is that she has been scheming the whole time, like that award ceremony thing.
Yeah.
I think you could credibly say that she played it so it could be either.
Right.
And I just don't remember which it is.
Yeah.
But the longer it goes on, the sort of, like, you know, and in some scenes she's, like, you know, scheming little rich girl. So it's like, which is it? It's just, it's not boring
mm-hmm.
to watch. She's doing well, except, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the other side of it is, like, she schemed her way into a job, into the mm-hmm. internship. And then she's further, she'd, like, use that scheme as a stepping stone to, like, get an actual job.
Right.
By, like, offering the house and then getting her dad to come and be like, oh, I thought it was a real job. And then basically, like, painting Allison into a corner.
Right.
Kind of forcing her to give her a real job. So part of it may be, like, she thinks she can get further manipulating Allison than she will if she throws in her lot with Amanda.
Yeah. I mean, both have pluses and minuses, but, you
they
know.
They do.
It's really hard to make the Allison argument.
Yeah.
Ever. Anyway.
Yes. But I agree that the writing doesn't always make it clear, like, what side she's on.
Yeah. Because I'm sure it doesn't know, and because it doesn't need to, it's not specifying. Because, yep. like, I think calendar-wise, we're, like, at the end of April of the year mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. So we're rounding the clubhouse turn, and it's like, look, we'll sort it out later. If her contract gets picked up, we'll figure it out and retro engineer it, and that's fine.
Exactly. Anyway, when Billy comes around the corner, Amanda puts on a show for his benefit, yelling at Brooke to get it together. She's not working for her daddy anymore. Brooke is like, and wanders off as Amanda rolls her eyes. And Billy mildly scolds Amanda not to take her own career frustrations out on Brooke, and Amanda shrugs, why not? She's there. Which is,
queen.
Like, credible to cover up what they're really doing, just Amanda being bitchy.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of following Allison around with that steno pad, that's what we see Brooke doing next, taking dictation in Allison's office, which, like, in 1995, type your own email, Allison, damn.
Well, really.
Skirt check, short. Brooke then comes out to the bullpen, smirking, to report to Amanda about the imminent meeting with Tyler Hirsch from this week's super important client, Mrs. Molly's Cookies. Brooke's dad knew Tyler Hirsch's father, and there's a story there, and Amanda mutters for Brooke to tell it later. So that night, Amanda sits next to her answering machine at home, listening to Michael leave a message that yaws from testiness about her ignoring him to begging her to believe he cares about her, eventually ending on a vague threat. She then picks up the phone to call the oncology department at the hospital and tell the nurse on the desk to make sure Michael is not at her appointment with Dr. Stevens the next day. And at that appointment, Dr. Stevens is full of glowing reports for Amanda's amazing soap opera recovery. I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm.
Excellent brain transplanting.
So with that out of the way.
Leg presses at the gym and rushed right over. Oh, so good.
With that out of the way, Amanda's hoping he can help her with another problem. She wants Michael to stop harassing her. And he says she should file a complaint with the chief of staff, Dr. Hobbs. And the mention of a chief of staff at the hospital makes me realize how completely the waters have closed over one Dr. Peter Burns on this show. Like, seriously, no one has mentioned him in weeks. Until now.
I am assuming Dr. Hobbs is Chris and Dr. Burns in an overcoat with Groucho glasses.
Anyway.
Like, he's very tall. Like, guys, open the raincoat.
Yeah, the last thing we heard was that he was in jail for trying to kill Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, then, like, that happened and then he was not brought up again. But anyway, until now, clip 13.
Well, if he's anything like the last chief of staff, Peter Burns, I doubt he'd be much help.
I'm sorry. That's the best I can offer. Unless you want to go to the police.
One of these days, I'm going to sue the hell out of this hospital.
Fucking sue
someone.
Someone
fucking should. Jesus. Class action, anybody?
Honestly. But anyway, this is how we know, I assume. Oh, yeah, Dr. Peter Burns. We're like six episodes out from the finale. Like, that mofo's coming back. So When Dr. Stevens has left and Amanda's taking her gown off, she hears the door open again on the other side of the curtain, assumes it's Dr. Stevens coming back, but it's Michael looking completely desperate. She snaps at him to get out or she'll scream, and he starts in with all his declarations and only stops when she slaps him. Clip 14.
The only reason I put up with you for this long is because you helped me when I was sick. Now you have 2 seconds or I'm calling the nurse in here and your reputation is ruined. Oh, for God's
he
sake.
He falls on his
knees.
That's
right, Amanda. I'm begging you. You see? I'm at your mercy. All I ask from you is a chance to prove that I can be good for you.
Michael, this is beyond embarrassing. If you ever had any dignity.
I don't care about that. All I want is for you to love me.
Get up, you slime, and get out of here. You disgust me.
All right. Okay, I'll leave. But I know what's wrong here. You think I'm the old Michael, trying to play for some advantage or something, but I'm not. We'll see.
No, I don't ever want to see or hear from you again.
Michael falling to his knees, much less sexy than when Jess fell to his knees in the earlier scene.
Yeah, what Michael also seems to be misapprehending is that I think Amanda either... and I guess it could be both, was vulnerable, and so she slept with him a couple times, mm-hmm. or she was, like attracts like.
Right.
Game recognized game. Yeah. So if you're going to be this moist, that's not, I don't feel like that's Amanda Nip. Sorry.
No, that's not the play.
No.
Definitely.
Also, don't grab her arm. Don't grab anyone's arm. Stop with the arm grabbing. Like, I was like, oh, an arm grab. And then she promptly decked him. And I was like, fucking A, thank you, show. Please make this happen every time.
Yeah. So in the D&D conference room, Allison and Billy prepare for the big cookie meeting while Brooke sits in taking notes. Presently, Amanda lets herself in, cheerfully deflecting Allison's orders that she fuck off by saying she knows a lot about the client and could be useful. And Billy backs her up. And instead of kicking them both out, Allison relents and resumes laying out her corny concept, clip 15.
The approach I feel we should take is conservative and family-oriented as before, but with a little more energy. The child in the stressed-out modern world comes home to Mrs. Molly's cookies in the kitchen, taking him and us back to a simpler time, Tom Sawyer, neighbors, warmth.
May I say something?
I can't see how I'd stop you.
Well, recently, the son of the founder of the company has taken the reins, and I think we should appeal to his youthful new energy and his new line of fat-free cookies.
The Tom Sawyer idea can encompass...
Hear me out. A young, vibrant, female executive. opens her desk drawer, only to find that her bag of Mrs. Molly's fat-free cookies is empty. So, spying Mrs. Molly's delivery truck 15 floors below, the executive, desperate for the only cookie that can satisfy her hunger, leaps out of her window, diving into the truck below. And the announcer is saying, "There is no wrong time to dive into Mrs. Molly's fat-free cookies."
I'm sorry, Amanda. Not in a million years. We are going with the Tom Sawyer idea. Billy, you and Amanda go see if you can come up with some variations on that theme and have them in my office by end of day.
Can't blame a girl for trying.
That was very specific.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I immediately was like, diving out a window. Yeah, no way that is not going to blow up on somebody.
No.
This will be horrible.
So when they've gone, Brooke suggests maybe Allison should try Amanda's approach. Allison says usually she is the one with the wild ideas. Okay.
Like marrying Billy. End of list.
But this just doesn't feel right. But maybe that's because she's president now, Brooke suggests. She shouldn't let that inhibit her. All the client can do is say no. Well, they can also pull their business, as happened with the cruise line client like 5 episodes ago, but sure. And Brooke says they can talk about it at Shooters after work. So Billy also shows up for the Shooters hang and introduces Brooke to Jake. Allison notes that Jake is single and if Brooke is interested, and then excuses herself. Then Brooke and Billy are left, and once Allison's gone, she turns her crazy eyes to Billy. Clip 16.
What?
You know I'm interested in you, not Jake, don't you?
I stopped trying to figure out what or who you're interested in.
I want to go home with you right now, Billy. I want you to unbutton my blouse and pull up my skirt.
Brooke, I'm not really sure about you.
Are you single or not?
Yeah. But it's a little too complicated for me. What do you see in me anyway? I mean, I don't have a trust fund, and I don't play polo. I'm just a kid from the suburbs.
Don't blame this on me.
Facial expressions.
I've made it damn clear how attracted I am to you, and that I am interested. But I'm tired of chasing. I don't make a fool out of myself for anybody.
Okay, take it easy.
Don't worry about me. You're the one who missed your chance. I won't be asking you again.
Ew.
But
it's Billy.
To her credit, she doesn't. She just, like, lays it out there and waits for him to follow her up. And, spoiler, he does. Then it's time for the big cookie meeting. Tyler Hirsch is the guy who played Lowell from the first season of Friends, whom Chandler's coworker tried to set Chandler up with because she thought Chandler had a quality. It's the first gay panic episode. Anyway, Allison gets up on her clunky stack heel penny loafers, which I most definitely had. And
same, two colors, AMA.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, an aristocrat.
And pitches Amanda's concept. And when the leap out the window comes up, Tyler's face falls, and he responds with horror. Clip 17.
Is there something wrong?
How could you? God, what kind of woman are you? My mother took her life by jumping from a 15-story window. And you poke fun at that? You make a joke?
Oh, no. Tyler, I didn't...
You are beyond disgusting, young lady. You are inhuman.
Mr. Hirsch, please.
Don't say another word.
Allison, I am so sorry. I had no idea. This is terrible.
You better pray you had no idea. You better pray you had nothing to do with this.
Who else would it be, you bonehead?
Like, 15. He said 15. She said 15. It's clearly arranged. God.
I mean, I'm glad that this is the only part that you clipped, because seriously, the pitch meeting starts and it really is like a horror movie. It was not only the cat, it was Manta. It yeah. really, oh God. And then, and you'll see this in the visual aids, like when Allison, when like the penny drops for Allison, Courtney Thorne Smith's face, oh my God, like it's beautiful. And I really respect her so much. She never cheats how just able to blow herself up Allison is repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Like she never cheats it even a little. And her look of complete pants drenching horror is amazing.
Yep.
The whole scene is, I mean, it's like very obvious that she was set up, but it's also like, it's so well executed for what it is, which is like soapy, predictable, business, sabotage. Like, okay, but mm-hmm. Whew, brutal. Well done.
Mm-hmm. I also find it funny that he calls her young lady. Like, you're the same age.
Anyway. Yeah.
So Allison goes flapping into her office, which is when we see the top of her suit under her jacket is like this long tunic vest situation, but they're all the same color. It's so bad.
And they're like interconnected in some way, I think. There might be like snaps. It's bad.
It's not clear if it's three pieces or if the top and the skirt are a dress. Either way, boo.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
So Billy comes in to see if she's okay while she gets on the phone to leave a message for Tyler at his office. Like, I think he may take the rest of the day off after that, buddy. But anyway, Billy, for some reason, thinks everything will be fine after Tyler calms down. Why would it?
And no.
Allison is not so sure. Clip 18.
I feel like I'm in a shark tank. There's betrayal everywhere. I need to talk to someone I can trust.
I'm here.
I can see that. What I need is for someone to treat me like a human being. Take me to dinner, all right? I'm sorry. Will you?
Sure.
Make a friend. Call Jane. Yeah. She has nothing else to do.
Also, I don't like going back to this setup for a second. Like, I well played by everybody in the scene. Mm-hmm. It's not super credible that this story wouldn't have gotten back to their advertiser.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, I know not everybody had internet, but like, come on. That mm-hmm. would have been a pretty big headline in the business section.
Right. Yeah. Paper. Even if it was like years and years ago.
Yeah.
People would know. Anyway. Yeah.
Ooh.
So Amanda lets herself into her apartment that night to find a huge spread of Italian food on the table. And this clip 19.
The mozzarella and the pasta and the primavera and the linguine and all the pastas. Bam, bam.
It's that last bit that really sells it.
Oh, yeah. I just love that. Anyway, Amanda does not. She orders Michael out. He ignores her, saying he thinks their problem is that she doesn't believe in his sincerity. But when she picks up the phone, he accepts she really wants him to leave and does, saying he has patience now. She orders him to knock the shit off, to which he tells her she'll come around and blows her a kiss. So good. This fucking guy.
Right. I mean, we're supposed to be kind of on his side in this stalking of her, which is not great.
No.
Also not great. I watched this episode hungry and I kept like sort of cutting my eyes over to the table. Like, I mean, imported pine nuts. Are you going to eat that? Are you going to eat that?
Yeah. Sound I don't think good. We are supposed to be on his side though.
You don't think so?
No, I think
we are supposed to think that it's, cuter than it is.
I think maybe we're supposed to think Michael has changed. Like, love has changed him, but right. I don't think we're supposed to think that that's what Amanda wants or needs.
Oh, right.
Or that this is okay.
No, I don't think so either, so.
Yeah. So then Billy's walking Allison back to her door after the dinner that she ordered him to take her on, but seeming very chill about it. She thanks him for doing it and for listening, but can't help being a bitch about it. Clip 20.
Sometimes I think no one understands, and then I realize at least you try.
What are you talking about? I understand you're under a lot of stress.
Billy, no offense, but you've never been in this kind of position. It's worse than a pressure cooker, but I'm handling it. I guess also with the trouble with my parents, there's no one to feel proud of me. I'm obsessed and I can't sleep.
Well, you're home now, so you can catch up on your sleep. All right, so I'll see you in the morning.
I have so much on my mind. I'll be up for hours. Unless, of course, I could find a friend who could help me relieve the tension. You're always real good at that, if you know what I mean.
I don't get it.
Come on, before I dock your paycheck.
Why don't you try a hot bath or a cold shower, all right? Because I got other things to do.
Billy? Billy?
Sue her. She just said she was going to dock your paycheck if you didn't fuck her. Oh, my God.
Like, even if it was a joke.
Yes.
No.
No.
Also,
okay.
You are the president. It's Billy.
Yeah.
Like, go on the back page of the Village Voice and figure some things out for yourself. That's all I'm saying.
LA Weekly, but yes, good point.
Yes, sure.
So the other things Billy has to do is apparently go to Armstrong Manor and chuck pebbles at Brooke's window to get her to come down the stairs from her balcony in her weird vintage peignoir, which you can see in the visual aids. Like, okay, Rebecca. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca.
He knows what he wants.
LA, not that confidential. Oof, yeah.
He says he knows what he wants now, and it's her. And she tells him to come up quietly so they don't wake Daddy. And he does, and then we have to watch them do foreplay for way too long.
Oh, my God, it's still happening. And his mouth does not move.
No.
It's like watching a bird get a baby bird being fed. Like, what is happening?
Yeah. I have it in my notes as his fishy kiss technique to remind myself to gif it, which I did. Sorry. But he just does this thing where he's like coming at her, and it's supposed to be like, I think we're supposed to think he's like teasing her, but it just looks like he's trying to kiss her and he keeps missing because it's Billy.
Yeah. Well, this is how inexperienced tweens gulp air to make themselves belch. Eventually, they get the hang of it and they don't have to keep doing that anymore.
So the next day, the business balcony makes an appearance so that Billy can make a lascivious comment about enjoying seeing Brooke come down spiral staircases. And she purrs at him that they can't do this at work. He warns her that Allison's looking for her and seems pissed. Brooke's guess is that Allison somehow found out that she and Billy fucked, but he says he didn't tell Allison. And while she makes her way, she also passes Amanda, who murmurs at her to prepare herself. It's almost time for their palace coup. So then Brooke lets herself into Allison's office and sits so that Allison can be completely inappropriate at her. Clip 21.
You probably know that Billy and I had a long relationship. In fact, we were almost married once.
Yeah?
Well, that's over. I guess I never really understood that until now. And now I feel like I don't have any friends in the world.
I'm sure that's not true, Allison.
Well, it is.
I don't mean to get too personal, Brooke, but
too late.
I'm grateful to you for being someone I can trust.
Well, you're welcome. And the feeling's mutual.
Good. Because it's open warfare around here, and I need you to do a favor for me.
Sure, whatever you need.
I want you to spy on Amanda for me. Befriend her, find out what she's trying to do before she does it, because I know she's up to something. That Tyler Hirsch fiasco is no accident.
If that's what you need me to do, Allison, I'll do my best.
Thank you. It means a lot to me.
Don't mention it. I'm glad to do it, really.
Please, don't mention it again. Sob.
Allison's instincts, unerring as always. Just a great read on human nature is what we've got here.
Yep.
And that's it for this episode. Let us close it up by naming our MVP. Amanda!
Hmm.
mean.
Agree, but I will give an honorable mention to Big Putt-Putt. Once again, the performatively wacky first date of choice for TV and film.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of puns about holes and sticks.
I hear you, but let us not forget, it is actually fun.
Oh, it is extremely fun.
Holy moly, is back soon, next month.
Yay.
Least valuable player. I mean,
we're spoiled for choice here. It's tempting to say Allison. I'm going to say Michael because, hey, you're stalking her. I don't care. Like, take your pine nuts and get the fuck out. Get some therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm gonna
leave the pine nuts. Leave the gun. Take the pine nuts.
I'm going to say Sarge. Pay more attention to your campers, my dude.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Next time on Again With This, Matt finally gets a plot again, and it's a bummer again. Kimberly benefits from antisocial promotion. Amanda springs the trap at last, and Sydney... Oh, Sydney. Someone help Sydney. You'll need the help of Eclipse goggles when you visit our visual aids. You'll find those at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find a link to our very special 90210 book, illustrated by Julie Kane. So be like Jenny Garth, browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm fixture at the 19th hole, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Corpse of Your Enemy, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Didn't think that one through. Let's just blunder ahead. And our producer, David T. Cole, just feels too much. Talk to you next time.
Oh.
Fair.